Going Linux, Episode 76, Linux File Systems, an Introduction. Welcome to the Going Linux Podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
Currently, we create 3 episodes a month. We release listener feedback episodes at the beginning of each month and user experience episodes near the end. Following the third Tuesday of each month, we post Larry's appearances on the live Computer America show.
In the user experience episodes, we take 2 months to cover a topic. First, an introduction, then an in-depth look at the Linux operating system and its applications.
And for today's episode, we have an introduction to Linux file systems. We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. Larry, how's it going?
I am just so glad to be back recording our next episode of Going Linux.
Have you told me a while back that your company is moving toward Linux. Is that still happening?
Yes, I'm still involved in evaluating Linux for my company. We still haven't made any decision. The folks involved in the project of evaluating Linux have actually been distracted with some other work, some work that they actually get paid to do, so it's not making as much progress. But that's fine with me because that gives me an even longer period of time to use Linux at work officially.
I read a rather disturbing report not long ago from an IT manager who was tasked with researching the possibility of moving a corporation over to Linux. And I believe it was a she. And she put heart and soul into this and came up with a report and a path, a plan, and presented it. And the boss took the plan to Microsoft and said, you know, we could go with Linux. Why don't you give us a really good deal on Windows?
Mm-hmm.
And that was all they wanted it for in the first place.
Oh, what a shame.
Really a shame.
Well, I hope they got a very good deal.
Well, she was just irate.
I bet.
So, on another downbeat.
Downbeat? Okay.
There is something out there called Hannah Montana Linux.
You're kidding.
It's a distribution called Hannah Montana Linux.
Okay. Does this mean you've had an opportunity to try it out, Tom?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I have.
I know this is not a Linux distribution evaluation episode, but can you give us a brief overview?
Sure.
What's it like?
It's based on Kubuntu.
Oh, that's a good sign.
It's a live CD.
Uh-huh.
The screens, if you go look for some screenshots of this thing, the color scheme, well, actually, you should keep some screenshots around in case you ever accidentally swallow poison, because they will induce vomiting. The colors are just so disgustingly garish. I don't know, at least to a person my age, maybe they're appealing to a teenage girl.
Okay, I'm on the website, purple.
Oh, yeah, and lime green and just nasty.
Uh-huh. Cool.
Now, at first I thought, okay, this is maybe this is a good thing. Maybe it'll get some kids to move toward Linux. But then I found some evil in it.
Oh?
And that is, on the site, there's a song, which are apparently alternative lyrics to a Hannah Montana song.
Uh-huh.
Oh, nothing wrong with that, except way down in the middle, where most people aren't going to read down to, is a little something for the girls to type into their terminals. And it is RM dash.
Oh, first, Tom, hang on. Our listeners, do not type this into your terminal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
So go ahead, continue.
As I said, it's evil. RM dash RF wildcard, which recursively wipes your drive. So, seeing as how whoever authored this thing cannot be found, or at least I haven't been able to find out who's responsible for this, I'm kind of thinking this is a big prank. Somebody's having a good laugh and saying, look at the Linux idiots. Any distribution that comes out, they'll try it. And in the meantime, they're hurting people's computers. So people, don't try this. Go look at it. It's funny. But I don't advise installing it, and please keep your kids away from it.
Yeah, well, if that is indeed the motivation here, then I would agree with that. I initially thought it was a serious distribution for the kids that, you know, it was just something aimed at young kids.
It's being taken that way, yeah.
Well, and I was thinking that maybe it was something that maybe someone who's a Hannah Montana fan has created and just put out there, because it's pretty easy to, with today's tools, create your own distribution.
Sure.
When you're publicizing something that will destroy somebody's computer, that's not a good thing either way. And
it's just malignant.
Yeah, perhaps a person who published the lyrics to the song is not related to the person who's publishing the software, but
we don't know. But at that point, I had to say, this is not something to trust.
Yeah. So that ends our review of Hannah Montana Linux.
Yeah, we don't normally do such things, but I had to say something. It's just hideous.
Well, thanks for taking a bullet for us, Tom.
You bet.
Well, let's get into our intended topic for the day.
Okay.
And thanks for the topic suggestion from listener Reese, and for the inspiration from Chess Griffin.
Good guy, Chess. Well, if you've used Windows, Linux, or Mac, you'll already be pretty familiar with files and using one type of file system or another. This episode will help you to understand the basics of the Linux file system so that you get a sense of the simplicity of its layout compared to that of Windows.
Well, let's start with some differences and some similarities. Mac users will likely find many more similarities with Linux than Windows users do because of Mac's BSD roots and both Linux's and BSD's common Unix heritage. So let's focus our attention on comparing how Windows XP stores files as compared with how it's done on an Ubuntu Linux machine.
Well, first off, Windows uses the term folder. And Linux, depending on a distro, uses either folder or directory, and we'll use both terms interchangeably in this cast. When looking at the name of a path to a file, you'll notice that the slashes are different. Linux uses a forward slash, and Windows uses a backslash. Now, a forward slash is a vertical line that's kind of tipped to the right a little bit, and a backslash is one that's kind of tipped to the left.
Another difference, in Linux, the older IDE hard drives are given labels like HDA and HDB, and the SATA drives, those are the newer style drives, they're given labels such as SDA and SDB, etc. Removable floppy drives are given labels such as FDA and FDB, F for floppy. CD and DVD drives are labeled CDA and CDB. Kind of makes sense with those types of labels.
Sure.
Each physical hard drive may be divided into separate areas for storing different types of files. These areas are called partitions. And they're labeled under Linux clearly as partitions within that hard drive. If your first hard drive is labeled HDA, for example, and it has two partitions, they will be labeled HDA1 and HDA2. Very straightforward. In Windows, open the File Explorer and it shows My Computer, and under the My Computer icon it shows drives using letters A and B are the labels given to the first two floppy drives if you have them, and then other types of drives are labeled beginning with the letter C. After C, Windows uses subsequent letters for each new drive in the order they are recognized, regardless of their type. Somewhat confusingly, if your computer has a single physical hard drive and you partition it into two separate spaces to store your information, files in one partition and programs installed in another, Windows will assign each partition a hard drive letter and make it look like you have two physical hard drives. You can even find yourself in a situation where drive letters C and F are partitions on one physical hard drive, and letters D and E are on another physical hard drive. That can be very confusing.
You bet. Also, when using the Windows File Explorer, you'll notice when looking at the path name for a file, it always begins with one of those drive letters you just mentioned, for instance, C, / program files, / Windows, MT, / etc., etc. Yet confusingly to new Windows users, when you look at the Windows File Explorer, the operating system appears to have the desktop at the top level of the file system and stores user-created data in what appears to be a folder under the desktop labeled My Documents. Dig a little deeper and you'll find that the desktop and My Documents folder are actually two separate folders buried deep within a Documents and Settings folder in a User Profile folder. This is because each user has their own desktop and My Documents folders. The Windows Desktop and My Documents folder are given special magical properties by the operating system so that they appear to be at the top level when they really aren't. Using the Nautilus file browser in Ubuntu, or other file browsers if your chosen distribution uses something else, when you click on the icon for the file system, you'll find that Linux has a top-level directory in the file system, /, and that /, is often referred to as the root directory. All paths to the files and folders under Linux start with that /, and not the name of the hard drive. When Linux creates any other file or folder, you'll find it under a very logically laid out structure under that root directory. In fact, Linux creates the default directory for each user to store user-created data and places it in a directory labeled Home.
Yes, Linux makes it easy and stores user preferences for each application in a hidden directory for that application in the user's home directory. Linux users find it extremely easy to back up their saved data and the settings and preferences for all of their installed applications. They just copy the home directory to an external storage device and it's done. Under Windows, each application program determines where its user settings, preferences, and data created by the application is stored. Settings can be stored in the My Documents folder with all of your other data, but more than likely, it's in some other location. Windows lets applications store their settings under the Hidden Program Files folder, in a folder usually named for the application, but sometimes named for the software publisher. They can also be stored in the Hidden, Cryptic, and Very Complex Windows Registry, or anywhere else the application wants to store it. That structure makes it very difficult to locate, let alone back up, all of your data and settings for all of your applications.
Well, in fact, with Windows, even if you're able to locate and back up all of your settings, there's no guarantee that you can use them. Some programs require that when you install, you must reset all of your preferences manually. Let's end our comparison of the two systems at this point and start to dig into how the Linux file system is structured.
Okay, as we mentioned earlier, the top level of the Linux file system, the root of the file system, is represented by /, and that is labeled file system in the Nautilus file browser. There are 12 common basic directories in Linux. You can see them in the Nautilus file browser if you click on the icon for file system. They are bin, B-I-N, dev, etsy, or E-T-C, home, lib, L-I-B, mount, and in some distributions it's M-N-T as opposed to the word mount, proc, or P-R-O-C, root, sbin, S-B-I-N, temp, or T-M-P, USR, and var, V-A-R.
Now let's look at each of these directories and describe what they're for. Bin, of course, is short for binaries. That's where you're going to find your executable applications and scripts that are accessible to all users. That's where they'll be.
And binaries, for those not familiar with them, are the programs. These are the programs themselves. They're called executables. A script, of course, is something that might assist a program in launching something else that it needs at the time that it launches, or might be for other uses like setting up your wireless network card or something like that. So all of those things are stored in the bin directory.
If you open a binary and look at it, it's not human readable. It's only meant to be read by the computer. Whereas a script, if you open it up, that's readable. That's human readable. And you can go and look at what those scripts are doing.
Right. Now let's take the next one a little bit out of alphabetical order here. Lib, that's short for libraries. And these are related to the binaries. Libraries are shared pieces of software. They're assistant programs to the binaries, much like I just described scripts to be, but they're specific to a particular programming language.
Right, and it's kind of like a toolbox for that language. For instance, if you're writing a program in Python or Perl or whatever, and you want to get at the sound card, you can probably just load that library. You don't have to invent the wheels. You don't have to start from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Next up is dev, and that's devices. That's pretty self-explanatory. That's a virtual directory. There are no real subfolders. Listing folders and files that represent your hardware. And this gets set up when you boot. Unless you plug something else in, and then it'll show up too.
Right. So this would contain things like your hard drive or your floppy drive if you have one, your CD-ROM drive, your MP3 player, those kinds of things.
Sure.
And the next directory is the etc folder. And I've heard a lot of people pronounce etc in various ways, and it is really meant to be short for etc, I believe. In any case, it is where configuration files are generally stored. Those are stored in the etc folder along with initialization files that may be used at boot time.
Next up, we've got home. And that's real self-explanatory. That is where the default directory for each user is created.
Right, and that's where your files that you create using your software, your word processor, your
right.
Audacity recorder, whatever they are, they all go into your home directory. And the next one is MNT, or mount. Floppy drives, CD drives, hard drives, they're all here. And each device is represented by a directory. You can create them manually, if you like, for manually mounting any of these devices. Linux mounts the file system of your device from here so that it can read the information on that device.
Right, and these files do not represent the actual devices. The actual devices are represented over in DEV. These are mount points for the devices. I know that's a little bit confusing, but if you want to mount a device that's over in DEV, you have to come to the mount directory, create a file there, associate it with the device, and mount that device.
Yeah, you might want to think of it this way, that Linux really doesn't mount the hardware. It mounts the file system in the hardware. And in the dev directory, that represents the actual physical hardware. In the mount directory, that's where it makes a shortcut to the file system that's on that device and gives you all of the file and folder structure that's inside that device so that you can browse it.
There you go. In the device directory, if you try to enter one of those files, you're not going to find anything reasonable in there. However, if you've got a USB drive plugged in somewhere and you go to the mount directory and open the file for that USB drive, you're actually going to see the contents of that drive.
Exactly.
Next up, we've got proc or pros, PROC, and that's a virtual directory that contains information about the system.
Yes, in the proc directory, you'll find some text files that give you information about your hardware. So, for example, in the proc directory, you might find a devices file, which is a text file that lists information about the devices you have connected to your computer. You'll find a file called CPU info, which gives you just that, information about the CPU of your hardware, and disk stats, statistics on your hard disks. So there's a lot of information in that proc directory that can be useful for you. Although these are text files, don't go editing them. They're just for information for you to read. They're not intended to be user modifiable.
Good point. Good point. Let's not meddle in there. Take a look, but leave it alone.
Yep. There is a root directory as well. Now, we talked about the root directory being the slash. Well, there's a slash root, and this is the default home directory for the user that is the administrator of your hardware, the root user, if you will. Now, it's not in the home directory, primarily for security reasons. You could, if you wanted to, completely delete your home directory and still have a usable system because the root user's home directory is located in this specific root directory.
And the directory called slash root slash beer is delicious.
Yes. Beer made from root.
Yeah. Okay, next up, SBIN, secure binaries. That's where you'll find certain applications and programs requiring administrative privileges. And these might include something like FDisk or reboot.
Right. And the temp, or TMP, is a temporary directory. And this contains files that are created by applications that they only need on a temporary basis. So they create them, and then they are discarded once they are no longer needed.
Yeah, for instance, as you're loading a web page, you're going to need some place on the system to put pictures, etc. And that's a temporary directory. When you reboot, it's gone.
Right.
Next up, USR stands for Unix System Resources.
Yes, it's not user.
And I didn't know that until I read it just now. Thank you, Larry.
Yeah. Okay.
And this has many subdirectories, contains shared data, libraries, binaries, and these are files that may be shared with another system using the network or the internet.
Right. And that's something I didn't know either until I read about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Var, the next directory, is variable. This holds variable files or data that changes a lot, such as log files, databases, cron jobs. They're all run from this directory.
And then some additional directories that some Linux distros might use are boot, and of course, boot contains system files such as the Linux kernel, media, and that would be the mount point for removable media, CD-ROMs, USB sticks, and that's very much like MNT or mount. And then opt, OPT, which stands for optional. And that's a location for installing add-on software and applications. Do we have an opt in Ubuntu?
I don't know. Let me take a look. Places and file system. There is an opt. And I've got Adobe as one of the things in opt, and I've got LightScribe, which is the software for the HP DVD writer that allows you to label things. So, and they've got, yeah, the Adobe one is the Adobe Reader.
Okay.
Yeah. We just touched the surface here. The folders and directories we've described so far are the ones that are right off the root directory. And there are many, many more, very deep in terms of subfolders under many of those folders and directories. And Linux has a file system hierarchy standard that's been defined by the Free Standards Group. And that standard is described at Wikipedia, and we'll have a link to that standard in our show notes. The Free Standards Group's website is www.pathname.com/FHS.
And although we've covered some introductory aspects of the Linux file system, they may seem advanced to some of our listeners. For additional information, also check out Linux Reality episode number 11. There will be a link to that in the show notes, where Chess Griffin's content has given us the outline for this episode. Thanks, Chess. And about the file structure tree, we have a real good link for that. And it's a picture.
Yes, it is. It's a diagram of the file structure in a tree format. For those people who want to see the visual of this, that's a good place to go.
There you go.
And one more thing. Binary Signal created two YouTube videos using Chess Griffin's audio from his episode 11 that we have the link to in our show notes. And we'll have a link to part one and part two, those two videos, where they actually do a screencast of the audio that Chess recorded for his podcast. We'll include links in the show notes and on our screencast page.
And one more thing from me about Linux file systems. Let's say you're about to go to the grocery store, the hardware store, and one other store, and you're making a shopping list. Well, at the top of the page, you've thought of three things, milk, eggs, cheese, and you've written those down. If you are a Linux system, you're going to leave a little space underneath that before you start the hardware entries, just in case you think of something else. If you're a Windows file structure, you're going to start the hardware list right underneath milk, egg, and cheese. And then when you think of something else for the grocery store, there's no room for it, so you're going to have to put it somewhere else on the page and draw an arrow down to it so you don't forget. And that is called fragmentation. Instead of all of what you want being in one place, that original place was closed. And so if you want to add to it, you have to put it somewhere else on the disk. And that's why you have to run defrag every now and then. And you'll notice you'll never have to run defrag on a Linux file system.
Very good point, Tom. And that pretty much wraps up our episode. So our next episode, Tom, will be listener feedback. And we've got a lot of it, so thanks to our listeners for sending that in.
Cool.
Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations. Email us with comments, questions, and suggestions. And remember, if you have a topic suggestion, use the Podcast Alley button to leave your topic suggestion while you vote for us on their site.
You can send us an audio comment, and we love those, by email, and we'll play it on the show. That email address is goinglinux@gmail.com. And you can follow our show updates on Twitter and Identica. And our handle is goinglinux. And by the way, on Twitter, you don't actually have to join. You can just go to Twitter/goinglinux and view them on the web.
Exactly. And there's an RSS feed there as well. And you can download our episodes from our website, or you can use the Flash Player to play them right there on the show notes page.
You can also get future episodes of the podcast delivered directly, fresh and hot, to your computer automatically as soon as a new episode is available. For instructions on how to subscribe to a podcast, go to subscribe.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco, at podcastthemes.com.